This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
Welcome to this edition of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, coast to coast on Air America Radio. Tom Hartman is returning today from Croatia. You probably heard his live broadcast from Dubrovnik yesterday with great guests like Tom Hayden and Francis Moore LePay, David Corton. And Tom will be back with you on Monday. And the regular segment that airs at this time, Brunch with Bernie, will return next week with Senator Bernie Sanders. Instead, we're going to have a latte with Pete. I'll explain in a moment. I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco. Happy to be subbing for Tom today. It's a distinct pleasure for me. We'll be taking lots of your phone calls today. It's going to be more or less than Anything Goes Friday. That's the usual shtick here on the Hartman Program. And you can grab a line toll-free at 866-303-2270. That's toll-free, 866-303-2270. And at any moment, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. I do check during the break, so if I get something wrong or you want to hit me with something you think we ought to be talking about, just drop me an email, Peter at peterbcollins.com. In addition to lots of your phone calls today, I'm going to lighten it up a little bit. Want to see if Sopranos fans want to speculate on the outcome of the final episode. And in honor of the indictment of Congressman William Jefferson, I'd like to ask people, where do you hide your loot? You know, when you have 90,000 in FBI-marked bills laying around the house, do you store it in the freezer? Or do you have a better location? Those are some of the things we'll cover along the way today. But as I mentioned, I want to kick it off with a little latte with Pete. And Pete, in this case, is a distinguished member, a former member of Congress, and more recently, a former member of the Republican Party. We'll explain. Pete McCloskey served with distinction in the United States Navy, was decorated for his service in the Korean War, and he went on to serve in the Congress and ran for president as a way of opposing the Vietnam War and challenging the status quo at that time. And more recently, if we fast forward, Pete McCloskey came out of retirement last year to challenge Republican Congressman Richard Pombo, one of the worst of the worst, an Abramoff crony, a guy who wanted to drill for oil everywhere, including off the California coastline and in Anwar, a guy who had ethical challenges and tried to use his seat in Congress to benefit family businesses. The litany goes on and on. And Richard Pombo is history because, I believe, Pete McCloskey took on that challenge. Pete, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program today. Good to talk with you.
Good. Hi.
And I just wanted to acknowledge, in the interest of full disclosure, that last year during the primary campaign, when you took on Mr. Pombo, that I was pleased to serve as a paid media consultant on your campaign, and I was happy to be a part of that effort. You were really angry, and you were part of what is called the Revolt of the Elders. Tell me just how revolting you feel, how revolted you feel at the conduct of the Bush administration these days.
Well, the Revolt of the Elders was a group of former Republican congressmen who just got fed up with the ethics violations of the Republican leadership under Pastor and what was that fellow's name, Tom DeLay.
Mm-hmm.
They had a money tree in Washington. They were taking money from everybody in sight. They were returning the favors. Two of them have been indicted, and there will be more, I think, in the future, maybe Doolittle, maybe even Pombo.
Mm-hmm.
But we were upset that the Republican Party had lost its moral compass, and we took on, we started to take on in primaries the Republican people who were the worst of the Abramoff DeLay people. We couldn't find anybody to write against Pombo, so I had to, but we were relatively successful in trying to restore some semblance of ethics to the Congress. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's not a partisan matter. And when I was in Congress 15 years, there were 36 people indicted, members of Congress, 35 of them were Democrats. They had the power.
Yeah.
It took the Republicans only about 12 years to get corrupted by the DeLay Abramoff, and I think you're going to see more people indicted because of the money tree and the greed.
Well, and it is bipartisan. I mentioned Bill Jefferson, a Democrat from Louisiana, in my intro, and I believe that he should resign from the Congress forthwith. That's one of the few things that I agree with John Boehner on, of course, for very different reasons.
Well, it's the Congress has a stench about it as a result of those scandals, as the Bush administration has a stench about it, as a result of what's been coming out about the Attorney General and the U.S. attorneys and the outing of Valerie Plame as a secret covert agent. This administration may be as corrupt as any in history, not necessarily the president, but from the vice president on down, I think they've been guilty of serious offenses.
And Pete McCloskey, do you believe, as I do, that Alberto Gonzalez should be impeached, that the Democrats should be bringing him up on impeachment charges?
Well, he could be impeached, but the process takes a long time. The House would have to vote articles of impeachment. They may do it. But he's a sorry, sad case. The fact that he is number three person, graduated from Pat Robertson's law school, never tried a case, and was put in charge of U.S. attorneys and judicial appointments. I mean, it's a shame. It's a crying shame. It's demeaned the government, demeaned the law, and respect for the law.
Mm-hmm. And Pete McCloskey, give us your advice about the best way to end the occupation of Iraq and bring home our troops. You were at the forefront of confronting the Nixon administration over ending the participation in Vietnam. And I'd like to hear your thoughts. There are many disaffected Democrats and disappointed Republicans right now who expected that the new Congress was really going to be able to change the policy.
Well, I hope they'll still vote in September to cut off the money. It's hard. They face the challenge that you're not supporting the troops. But this is not a war against terror over in Iraq anymore. It's a war of occupation. And we've never been successful in occupying foreign countries, particularly with as few troops as we have and as big as that country is. And I just hope Congress will vote to cut off the funds. I believe the pressure should be brought on Congress. Obviously, Bush isn't going to do anything.
Now, as I mentioned, you're a decorated Marine. How do we separate the issues here that the only way the Congress can really change Bush's policies is to cut off the funds, and he has so far successfully positioned that rhetorically as the equivalent of not supporting the troops, cutting off funding for the troops?
Well, I'll tell you what we did back in 1973. Congress passed a law that he had to stop the bombing in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam by August 15th, 73. And we could do that again in September. We could say, we're just going to stop the war. We're not going to fund it any longer. And the president would have to obey. He's bound to obey the law. He's the commander-in-chief of the troops. But if Congress says, you got to bring them home, he's got to do it.
Well, again, referring to that page from 1973, did not Nixon respond with the what we're hearing now, the old saw that, oh, Congress is trying to micromanage the war. I am the commander-in-chief. I'm the commander guy.
Well, it's true. When we passed that amendment, 204-204 defeated the amendment to let him continue the bombing past August 15th, he tried to resume the bombing, but his lawyers told him that, look, Congress has said you can't bomb anymore. That means you can't do it. And he obeyed his lawyers. The problem with this attorney general, the attorney general won't tell him what he doesn't want to hear. It's a terrible sadness because a lot of people are going to die between now and whenever we get those troops out of there finally.
Yeah.
And it would be worthwhile if we were accomplishing anything. But I believe that most military minds would agree we're creating as many terrorists as we kill in the streets of Fallujah and Baghdad and those other places over there. By an American armed presence in the Mideast for American Marines and soldiers, we're just enraging people that live in that area. If they were here in California, you and I and every other ex-Marine would be out in the mountains fighting against the occupying people.
Yeah. Now, Pete McCloskey, back there in 1982 when you ran unsuccessfully for the Senate from California, it caused me to cross party lines. It was the first time I ever registered as a Republican so I could vote for you. And you recently caused some chagrin to some of your old Republican pals because you crossed over and joined the Democratic Party. Tell us why.
Well, it was a hard thing to do. My family's been Republican since the time of Lincoln here in California, 1859. Four generations of Republicans. And, you know, when you said Tom Hartman was over in Croatia, my son is a prosecutor fourth-generation California lawyer. Mm-hmm. He's over at the World Court in The Hague prosecuting Serbians for the crimes they committed in Croatia. But what really turned me around was essentially the Attorney General scandal and the Republican members in Congress standing up to defend their ethics and defend the things that they had done and Karl Rove had done. And I started getting sicker and sicker about being a member of a party that could stand the corruption and try to defend it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pete, I really appreciate the voice that you bring to these issues, the courage of your positions, and that you were willing to sacrifice last year in order to challenge Richard Pombo on behalf of a grateful nation. Thanks.
Hey, listen, it was easy to live in Lodi for months and take on Pombo compared to the several wars that I've been involved in. Thank you.
Okay. That's Pete McCloskey, former congressman, former Republican, and a great American. We'll go to the phones in the next segment here, so grab a line and let's talk at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. The fog is lifting over San Francisco Bay, and the bay is the color of Superman's hair. Can you envision that? Glad to be with you here on the Tom Hartman Program today. Give me a call, and we'll talk about the issues on your mind at 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. I got to tell you what a joy it is to sit in for Tom and be on the air coast to coast, because people crawl out of the woodwork, or actually they surface in my email. Norman Davis, a longtime great San Francisco radio guy, surfaced from Taos, New Mexico. Patrick in Chicago claims he has tapes of me from, well, too far back to actually tell you, but Nixon was in the White House. And let's see who else is here. A guy who used to live in the Bay Area. Mark, who is out in Colorado, checking in. Nice to hear from you. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com. Feel free to get in touch. Let's start off the calls with Steve in New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome, Steve. You're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
My question is, what do you think the chances are of this new bill that's introduced to bring back habeas corpus has of actually passing?
Well, I hope it can pass the House and the Senate. I am not confident that the President sees the wisdom of restoring habeas corpus. And I want you to know, Steve, that coming up next hour on the program, we're going to focus on America's torture policy. I'm going to bring you some powerful commentary from a man who served even longer than John McCain at the so-called Hanoi Hilton and was subjected to torture by the Viet Cong. And we're also going to talk with Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights. They've been at the forefront of defending the detainees at Guantanamo and challenging the illegal policies of the Bush administration. So we'll get more commentary on that. But my personal hope is that it will pass the House and the Senate. I just think that it's hard to imagine that it will get veto-proof margins and that the president would sign it. Thank you very much for your call. Now to Carlos in Santa Fe, one of my favorite towns. Welcome to the program today, Carlos.
Oh, I'm glad you're in San Francisco, Mr. Collins. I listen to your radio program, Air America, often, and you are so factual and so truthful that I hate to turn it off.
Oh, my. Well, that's very kind of you.
I love San Francisco, and give my regards to the trolleys there, up or down the hills.
I sure will. It's my pleasure. What's on your mind today, Carlos?
Well, Friday, all the things that you're saying are on my mind, but I'm trying to figure out a way here about the prophets, you know, in medicine,
mm-hmm.
like doctors, and the prophets in law, and the prophets in religion. They're all, some, not all, but many of them are just for profits, you know, but I'm saying that if you go to the diamond in baseball, and you have, like, out there in the open field, like you have the right fielder and the left, they're out sitting waiting for a good fly. I would call that the poor in a baseball game.
All right.
And hopefully, I would be out there on right field, and they would all be inside the baseball field like you guys are. You always try to get the truth out of and facts out of of life and people and a democracy, and that's just wonderful.
Well, or at least, Carlos, to extend your sports metaphor there, we enjoy the play-by-play, even if we can't affect the action on the field.
I feel like a shortstop. I'm 86 years old, but I love baseball. I love every American game that we used to play for children and for, you know, for really playing the game and mm-hmm. staying in an honest way of playing. And now we have all these other things that your radio program brings on, and you really check the facts, like you and the rest of the people in the program at Air America. I just love to listen to you.
Well, thank you very much, Carlos, and keep it up so we don't have to call the metaphor police. Now to Jack in Los Angeles. Hello, Jack, listening on KTLK. Jack, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Hey, Pete, thanks for taking the call. Listen,
oh, there you go
know,
again.
I just, my comment, and I'm glad to have a national forum to say this, is I really want Al Gore to come back into the race and take us back to 2000, how things should have been. I mean, I know it's a different world now, but, you know, at least if he can come back in, and take us back to that time. And I also wanted to add, I think it could be a good strategy for the Democrats to hold the presidency for at least a couple generations because, you know, I'm not sure Hillary or Barack is actually ready to be president, so Al could bring them in as a vice president, then when he serves for two terms, either Hillary or Barack could be president with the one that didn't make it as the vice president and could mm-hmm. just keep the chain going for, you know, 20, 30 years.
Well, Jack, I hear what you're saying. I'm open to Al Gore jumping into the race. I do take him at his word to date that he is not interested and doesn't plan to do that. But even Bill Clinton, I read an item online this morning, was asked in an offhand situation, and he said, I think Gore could jump in, particularly if Hillary or Barack stall. So I think it's still a possibility. I don't want to invest a lot of hope in that, and I also don't invest a lot in nostalgia. I think the Democratic Party needs to move forward, and first and foremost, I don't support dynasty politics, and so I don't believe that Hillary Clinton has a lock on the nomination, and I hope that people will give her a fair hearing, but not just be driven because of her poll numbers or the surname that she carries. We're going to take more of your calls coming up. It's wide open till the next top of the next hour. So grab a line toll-free at 866-303-2270. And you can even talk about Paris Hilton if you want. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
We continue now on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. We're taking your calls toll-free at 866-303-2270. Tom calls it Anything Goes Friday, and I'm wide open. Any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere in this great land, give us a call, and we'll entertain the conversation, you know, as long as it's interesting. And we can be ruthless. Just don't challenge me too much. I want to bring up something that is a personal peak. I'm planning some foreign travel. We're going to Italy at the end of July. My passport was expired. So I logged on to the internets, and I learned that there's a massive backlog at the State Department's passport office due to a variety of factors. This was the year that they started requiring passports for travel to Mexico and Canada and a few other places that used to let Americans slide. And also they have fancy new holographic images and, tamper-proof systems and all that. And so they're expecting 14 million people to renew their passports this year. And in Houston the other day, there were 1,200 people in line at the passport office, and these are people who are expecting to leave the country in the next week or two, and they haven't received their passport renewal. So with that information, I called up the State Department, got past the voicemail tree, and actually got to a human being. And I said, look, it's about 12 weeks between now and when I'm planning to travel. She said, well, you'd be taking your chances. We have a 12-week backlog. And they have a process where you can pay an extra $60 to expedite your application. And so, not willing to really risk it, I wrote a check for $120 for my passport and Kathy's. We sent them in. And in 18 days, our new passports came back. Can I get my $60 back, my $120? If you've encountered this, give me a call today and let me know how you dealt with it. And if you work for the government and have any insight into the inner workings of passport renewals, mine came out of an office in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Thank you, New Hampshire. I was just there over the Memorial Day weekend. Beautiful town. And thank you for expediting so I can travel without being an illegal alien in Italy. All righty, back to your calls we go. Jack in Oceanside, California. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
Yeah, your experience getting your passport.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see who the real enemy is. It isn't Al Qaeda. It's the American citizen. If you look at everything that's been done since 9/11, mm-hmm. it's all been done to rein in United States citizens.
Well, don't you feel safer? Isn't that what it's all about? We've hardened our airports.
I feel like I'm being watched all the time. But you know what I called in about was your guest that you had on?
Pete McCloskey.
Yeah, and I think he's got the right idea. I was always amazed at the consternation over taking out the timeline to withdraw in the original Iraq supplemental funding bill.
Mm-hmm.
That in its original form with the timeline to withdraw was always going to fund the conflict.
You're right.
And an order to withdraw troops can only originate from the commander-in-chief. Congress doesn't have the power to give that order. What Congress can do is what your guest was talking about, is cut the funding.
You are correct.
Or they can reduce the timeline of the funding, but they can't give an order to withdraw, no more can they order the commander-in-chief to attack.
I do think that they can put restrictions on how the money is used. And it does become subject to the criticism of micromanaging the military. But the Congress does have the right to say this money can only be used for these purposes and explicitly cannot be used for X, Y, and Z purposes.
Well, I think to an extent, but I don't think that would be true if you're starting to actually give an order that would apply to troops in what the president considers the time of war, and you're infringing on his capacity as commander-in-chief. But there still is a loophole, and that is, even if you were to cut the funding, there's a lot of slush funds all over Washington, D.C., and where he could grab money and keep the conflict going. And I'll give you an example of what Clinton did during his administration, and some of the real politicals will remember this. The Mexican peso was collapsing, and Clinton wanted Congress to pass a bill to prop up the Mexican peso, and Congress refused. So Clinton signed an executive order and took $20 billion out of the Economic Stabilization Fund, which mm-hmm. was a Treasury slush fund. The purpose was to prop up our own currency. He used it to prop up the Mexican peso. It was a brilliant stroke. It worked, and Mexico repaid all the money.
Well, Jack, what I think, if the Bush administration runs into a cash flow crunch, they should float a loan from Halliburton and Titan and Blackwater and Khaki and the other contractors who've made out like bandits on the occupation of Iraq. Thank you very much for your call today. Nice to talk with you. Let's go to Brian in Hollywood next. Brian, you're on the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Peter B.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to can you hear me?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to actually have you comment on two things. So I TiVo'd the Republican debate and just got to catch it last night, and, well, pretty amazing all over the place. But so basically I just wanted to talk about health care. I was wondering, first, it's basically Democrats want to, you know, essentially socialize medicine, and they Republicans want to privatize it and give you, like, tax credit so that we can...
Well, can I challenge your choice of words there, Brian? First of all,
sure.
I don't believe that it is socialization or socialism to move to a single-payer system in this country. Is the VA considered socialism? Medicare called socialism?
No, pardon me for a poor choice of words. But what I'm getting at, I agree. I think that we need to go to where, you know, government can negotiate with pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, and make have a universal health care plan.
Well, we need to have competition in the pharmaceutical industry, and we need to end the flirtation with for-profit delivery of health care services in this country. The so-called free market, as applied to the health care industry, has been an absolute failure. And we need to acknowledge that and move to a system that covers every American, that treats health care as a right and not a privilege that's based on your ability to pay. And we need to squeeze out the insurance companies that are really gouging the system with excessive profits. That's my quick approach. Brian, go ahead.
I agree with you. I guess I was just wondering if I could have you comment on let's just assume that a Democrat will win in 2008, and I'm just wondering which candidate do you believe has the most realistic and achievable health care plan?
Well, so far it's John Edwards, but I'm still waiting to see more details from some of the other candidates. But I give Edwards a lot of credit for taking thoughtful and detailed positions, acknowledging how he would pay for new programs like expanding health care insurance coverage to every American. And so, on a policy wonk level, Edwards is leading at this point. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your call. Ken in NYC, the Big Apple, you're next here on the Tom Hartman program. Go right ahead.
Yes, the business of cutting off funds for the troops. As Pete McCloskey said, you can't. Nixon had his funds cut off, and yet the war continued. Now we're looking at the same thing with Bush. You can cut off the funds, but the war will continue.
Well, that may be, but we have to start with the power that Congress has and the power and the oversight that Congress has failed to exercise until the Democrats have attempted it this year. They weren't successful so far, but it was the first foray into reestablishing a balance of power in Washington.
Well, I think the strategy they're using is pretty good. Coming at him every two or three months, since they need about 16 Republicans in the Senate, to work with them in order to have a veto-proof a bill. Also, I think they need about the same amount of additional people in the House of Representatives so that they can put through a bill that's veto-proof.
Well, Ken, I appreciate what you're saying, and I do not dismiss the hard work of Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and other Democrats in trying to turn this huge ship around and get it on a reasonable course. But my bottom line is that Russ Feingold and in the Senate, Barbara Lee in the House, have the ultimate correct position, and that is that Congress must have the courage to confront the wrongdoing and the misguided policies of this administration and simply cut off the funds and accept whatever political consequences occur. We have too much timidity, too much concern about protecting incumbents, and we need real leadership from Washington on the most crucial issue of our time.
The Republicans, the fact that the Republicans want to keep the war going. They are the ones that are keeping the war going, not the Democrats.
Well, and the Democrats need to do a better job of communicating that. We're on the same page, Ken. Thank you very much. Now to Mike in Scottsdale. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. It's Peter B.
Miss you in Phoenix.
Well, I miss Phoenix, too. Tell the folks at KPHX, will you?
I'll do that.
And then just for people who don't understand, I have a West Coast syndicated program that was on KPHX in Phoenix for quite a while. Really enjoyed connecting with people in Phoenix. There was a change, and now I'm not on there. But it's great to reconnect with a lot of Phoenix listeners. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, on to more serious stuff. My prediction for The Sopranos.
Okay.
I don't think, with the movie franchise possible, if James Gandolfini is left alive, that they really want to kill off Tony Soprano. But as we know, most of his crew has been bumped off in the last two episodes. He hardly has any bad guys left.
Well, they've been whacking, whacking, and whacking. I mean, it's like the Weed Eaters have been
so here's my
writing
prediction.
Scripts there.
So here's my prediction.
All right.
I think that for the movies, they're going to be looking for a group of natural crooks and sociopathic misfits. and they're going to use ex-Bush administration officials. I think that Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Jack Abramoff, Jeff Gannon, they're natural people for Tony Soprano's crew.
All you got to do is give them Italian names and move them to Jersey, eh?
Could you imagine Dick Cheney saying, like, the New York mobs is in their last throes, if you will. They'll greet us as liberators.
I can imagine him in the back room at the Bada Bing Club.
Oh, they're there already.
And, of course, he would destroy the logs of people who had visited the Bada Bing Club.
And they're already delivering the monies in envelopes.
No, it's in Bill Jefferson's freezer. Thank you, Mike. He knows how to do it on Anything Goes Friday. Give us a call. Any subject, light or serious. 866-303-2270. It's Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Tom is returning today from Dubrovnik in Croatia, where you heard him live by satellite yesterday, and he'll be back at you on Monday, as usual. And Breakfast with Bernie will return with Tom Hartman next Friday, as usual, on this hour of the Tom Hartman Program. We were speaking lightheartedly a moment ago about the final episode of The Sopranos, which will air this Sunday evening. And I'm sure a lot of people will be gathered around the tube for that. A real-life hit took place yesterday in Brooklyn. A reputed mobster named Rudolph Izzy got the bullet. So Sopranos is still based on real-life situations. A couple of emails came in during the break here, and let me read this one pretty much word for word. Last Tuesday, a caller brought up the subject of 9/11 conspiracy websites. It seemed as though you were very quick to interrupt him and referred to a 9/11 debunking source. When he tried to get back in on the conversation, you continued to talk over him and switched off his line. I feel this was disingenuous on your part. If a caller devotes part of a short time on Earth, waiting on hold to voice his opinion on your program, to voice his opinion, I think that's repetitive, you should give him his 25 or 30 seconds to conclude his thought. Well, John, in Novato, California, I appreciate your email. I want you to know that nobody is gagging me. He said, my reason for the email is I had the impression there was a gag order imposed on the subject of 9/11 conspiracy websites. If there is one, nobody told me about it, John. And I firmly believe that we don't know the truth about 9/11. And perhaps you misheard, because what I was saying is that I do believe there are very serious and valid questions, and that David Ray Griffin's book about debunking the 9/11 debunkers is a pushback against the people defending the official government story. So I hope you'll listen carefully there. And just to make up for my sins, we're going to put two callers on the air here at the same time. Bennett in Newburg, New York, and Bob in Santa Rosa, California. Both are calling about 9/11 issues. First up, Bennett, what did you want to comment on, and do you believe that there's any kind of a gag order to prevent people like me from talking about 9/11 truth?
No, I don't think there's a gag order. I think there might be a fear, and that fear would be self-imposed of being labeled a kook and not wanting to lose your credibility.
No, Ron Paul is out there now to make me look really sane and sober.
Well, I think you are sane and sober, and one of the reasons I'm calling is that a friend of mine, a highly intelligent, very well-informed individual, is convinced that the loose change theory is accurate, and he's obsessing with it, driving me and the whole world crazy, trying to convince us to join his crusade.
All right, Bob, Bennett, hold there for a second. Let's talk to Bob in Santa Rosa. What's your issue related to 9/11, Bob?
Well, I just wanted to talk about Sophia and 9/11 Mysteries. She's really bit off a lot. She did 9/11 Mysteries and has an updated version, and she's doing a trilogy. She's going to do the Air Force training exercises, and then who benefits? All the contractors and the Bush neocon movers and shakers, the dual Israeli citizens that really are up to this to their eyeballs. The thing about 9/11, I was actually going to talk about documentaries, Michael Moore and stuff, and how powerful they are. But Sophia has put at least $70,000 of her own money out on plastic. She's not a rich person. She's working like day and night to do this, and she needs help. Anybody that wants to donate to get to the truth, Just look at 9/11 Mysteries and let us know what you think, because it's not done. There's two more parts to come, and we need all the help that we can get. But if the problem with 9/11 is, if they can get away with 9/11 and Bush has miniaturized and updated nukes, if they can get away with 9/11, they could get away with detonating six nukes in six cities across the United States for their own nefarious purposes.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Bennett, what would you like to add here?
Well, you know, I think that technically it's possible, and I don't put it morally beneath the Bush administration to try to pull something off. I do put it logistically beneath them. You're talking about a conspiracy that would involve hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and it just seems highly unlikely that a crew that can't even pluck a few people out of the waters after a hurricane is going to be able to pull something off of that magnitude without being tripped up from the inside.
Well, I think the point you raised there last, Bennett, is the one that I use as a check on any theory that I hear brought forward. And I want to be really explicit here, and I'll give you guys each another comment before we go. But I don't know exactly what happened on 9/11. I don't know if there was a broad-based conspiracy either to allow the attacks to occur or if there was collusion. But I know that my suspicions have been fueled by the lack of honesty from our government, by the way that hard evidence doesn't square with the stories that we've been told. And I believe that the 9/11 Commission was a farce. I personally witnessed their work on a couple of days in Washington, and I was not persuaded that they were really there, hell-bent to get at the truth. Let me get a final comment from Bob and then Bennett. Go ahead, Bob, about 20 seconds.
Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote in his book, The Grand Chessboard, catastrophe on the order of Pearl Harbor needs to occur within the United States in order to galvanize the American people into an imperial mobilization, democracy being inimitable to imperialism. And the King Commission never considered controlled demolition or the U.S. Air Force training exercises involving live flight
hijacking
airliners.
I'm tight for time. Got to stop you there. Bennett, a final comment?
Well, I think throughout history there have been examples of similar plots being pulled off to lead us into war, such as the false reporting about the bombing of the Maine or the fire on the Maine and whatnot, Tonkin Gulf. But I agree with you that there needs to be more investigation.
Bennett, I got to stop you there. Thank you. There is no gag order about 9/11 truth. I hope we have put that to rest. I'm Peter B. Collins. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program. On Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
We continue on the Tom Hartman Program from San Francisco. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom again today. He'll be back with you on Monday after his week in Dubrovnik, Croatia. You heard his live satellite broadcast from there yesterday. We've got a lot to talk about, and there are lines available if you want to join the conversation here. Toll free at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. In about half an hour, Michael Ratner will join us. He is president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. They've been at the forefront of challenging the Bush administration on the unlawful, illegal, unconstitutional detention and interrogation policies. And, of course, one of the issues relates to habeas corpus. The Senate is working to restore that for detainees. Also, a court ruling was a setback for the Bush administration on one of the long-running cases involving a guy who was allegedly, at one point, Osama bin Laden's chauffeur. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I wanted you to hear a powerful first-person account of what it's like to be tortured and whether or not torture as a policy and as a practice actually works. We're told that Jack Bauer style, there's a ticking time bomb and there's a terrorist who can be beaten sufficiently to divulge the information we need to protect more human life. And that is a scenario that I will acknowledge is possible, but more likely in Hollywood than in real life. Phil Butler served our nation and was in what they called the Hanoi Hilton, longer than John McCain. I first met Phil through our radio station KRXA 540 in Monterey, which is a proud affiliate of the Tom Hartman program, and he joins us today from Monterey. Phil, thank you for talking with us.
Hi, Peter B. Good to be here.
My pleasure. And give our listeners a quick sketch of your service in Vietnam and how you became a prisoner of war.
Well, I was a Navy A-4C light attack pilot flying off the USS Midway in early 1965 and went down over North Vietnam on a bombing raid that I was on at night, and eventually was captured and interned in the Hanoi Hilton and 11 other prisons nearby. Over a period of 8 years, I was there from April the 20th of 1965 until our release February the 12th of 1973. And during the period of time from about the fall of 1965 until the fall of 1969, 4 years later, we POWs were tortured, harassed, and abused repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And their object was to get political propaganda out of us. What they really wanted were confessions that we had intentionally bombed schoolyards and children and hospitals, and that confessions that we realized that we were criminals,
mm-hmm.
which is what they called us. They called us criminals, didn't acknowledge that we were prisoners, didn't call us detainees,
mm-hmm.
new term, but they called us criminals and said, therefore, they could do anything they wanted to with us. They could torture us or do anything they wanted to, which they did freely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Phil, if you don't mind telling us, what kinds of methods did they use?
Well, they used methods involving tight handcuffs and ropes and pulling your body into different positions, legs around. It's difficult to describe over the air.
Stress positions.
Yeah, stress positions of all kinds, hanging you from the ceiling. And of course, they use withholding food and water, and they would keep you isolated with blindfolds and ropes and all sorts of things that would cut off circulation and cause great pain.
Mm-hmm.
With a few people, they used electric shock and then beatings all the time, just vicious beatings to the point where you'd be finally knocked unconscious.
Mm-hmm. And did you spill anything? Did you give up any information or offer one of the confessions that they sought as a result of the torture applied to you?
Well, ultimately, all of us wrote some kind of a confession when we were, you know, tortured and abused to the extent. But the things that we wrote were garbage. They were junk. One of my good friends, for example, wrote in his confession that his commanding officer, Dick Tracy, had ordered him to bomb hospitals and schools.
Mm-hmm.
So when those things got out into the world, caused a lot of embarrassment for the Vietnamese. And of course, then they came back at us and just beat us and tortured us even more. But basically, everything they got from us was junk.
Mm-hmm.
And torture doesn't work on two accounts. First of all, it doesn't work because when you're tortured enough, you will tell your tormentor whatever you think he or she wants to hear. So, you know, you basically can confess that your grandmother was a Nazi spy or anything
mm-hmm.
they want you to.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's all just junk, and torture really is not an effective way of getting information from people. If you want to get information from people, you really have to be kind to them and let them see that you're humane and have high morals. That would be the only way ultimately that you would ever get any decent information out of anybody.
We're talking with Dr. Phil Butler here on the Tom Hartman program. 8 years at the Hanoi Hilton as a POW in Vietnam, tortured, and we're getting his first-person account of whether torture works. Now, Phil, when you hear that, for example, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind of 9/11, has been held, and we now have details coming out, we'll discuss them in a few minutes with Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights, about the detention centers that the U.S. had with some friendly European nations. And, you know, we're told that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed gave up valuable information when he was subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques. Now, I have problems with a number of the terms used there, but fundamentally, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has been in U.S. custody for more than 5 years now. He can't possibly know anything about the current plans, intentions, strategies, or groundwork laid by al-Qaeda operatives in the world. So what could possibly be gained since we're not going to use him for some kind of a show confession?
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, obviously time is a critical factor when you capture anybody. If you can't get military information from somebody probably within 24 hours, then after that you're just wasting your time and you're going after nothing. But I read some of the stuff that guy confessed to. He confessed to everything under the sun.
Yeah.
From being Satan to whatever. So it was just I think most of his stuff is garbage, and I just deplore these terminologies like stress positions and enhanced interrogation methods and everything. This is inhumane 14th century junk that's being euphemized.
Now Phil, go ahead.
One of the interesting things about our time as prisoners of war there was one of the things that gave us great moral strength, internal strength, was we were always saying to each other that our country would never do these things to people. So we really had the high road. We really felt that we were much better than our captors.
Phil, tell me what you think when you hear Mitt Romney say he wants to double Gitmo.
Mitt Romney doesn't know squat about what he's talking about. If he's never been to Gitmo, he's clueless as to how effective it is or whatever.
And time is tight here. Tell me what you think of Senator McCain, your former housemate there at the Hanoi Hilton.
Well, John McCain and I were friends back from Naval Academy times, actually.
Can we go to break in about a minute?
And also friends, as POWs and later on. We differ on our political views on things, but we don't differ on torture. And John has come out strongly. As I have, against the notion of torture. We've got to be a better country than that. And I guess your Michael Ratner later on you'll explore more about the constitutional, legal aspects of the thing and the treaties that we've ratified as a nation. And ironically, the treaties that we've ratified, on torture and abuse of anybody, no matter whether they're a prisoner of war, a detainee, or anything, these things actually trump our Constitution. I'm sure Mr. Ratner will talk about the Supremacy Clause in our Constitution, which states that any treaty that's been ratified actually supersedes our Constitution or any other laws of our land.
Well, we'll try to touch on that. I really appreciate your comments today. Phil Butler, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Phil Butler, as you heard, served 8 years imprisoned in Hanoi in North Vietnam at what they called the Hanoi Hilton. And if anybody can tell us that torture doesn't work, I think you just heard it. I'm Peter B. Collins. Glad to have you listening today. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We go to your calls in the next segment at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you take exception, try bigmouth@peterbcollins.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, coast to coast, on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in on the Tom Hartman Program today from San Francisco. That's Neil Young's ode to impeachment for Bush and Cheney. And I believe that the torture policy and that the way it was codified in what is called the Military Commissions Act of 2006, jammed through the Congress right before the election last fall, I think that's a true low point in American politics in my lifetime. And I'm pleased to see that some senators are pushing legislation to reinstate habeas corpus as a right to anyone detained by the United States of America. But I don't think that's enough. Let's talk to Kyle in San Rafael, just down the street here in Northern California. Kyle, you're on the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter B.
Hi, Peter B., and happy Anything Goes Friday. The Raw Story website is reporting today that our Congresswoman, Lynn Woolsey, and the Congresswoman across the bay, Barbara Lee, who, by the way, was the only congressperson to vote against the initial resolution to start the Iraq War.
That's right.
They are both now signing on to the Dennis Kucinich bill that calls for the impeachment of Vice President Cheney. Mm-hmm. And this is huge because they are both co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which means that as of now, we are seeing real progress towards the impeachment. This brings to six the number of House members that are supporting this. And it starts slow, but it's building.
Yeah. Well, I believe that fundamentally we need to hold them accountable up to and including impeachment. And it disappoints me that Pelosi has repeatedly said that impeachment is, quote unquote, off the table. I don't think it should be the top priority of the Democrats, but I think as part of the methodical approach to investigation and accountability that it's simply a natural consequence if the evidence leads to impeachment. And I don't see why the Democrats are so afraid of it, and I think it should be applied to Alberto Gonzalez until he gets his butt out the door there.
Absolutely. You said the key word there, which is investigation. What's needed now, aside from more co-sponsors, and I urge everyone listening who has a congressperson who has not co-signed the Kucinich bill to call their congressperson immediately to get this going. But what's needed is a little pressure now on John Conyers, who mm-hmm. Heads the House Judiciary Committee. And with, I think with a little more pushing, we can convince Conyers, whose heart, I believe, is in the right place on this, but is being held back, I think, by Pelosi. I think we can get him to take it up and start the investigatory process. Which
well, and he has laid the groundwork for that already, so it wouldn't take him a whole lot of time or effort to move it forward. Thank you, Kyle. Steve in Mountain View, also listening to 960 The Quake in San Francisco. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter B.
Hi.
So, about 5 weeks ago, I found out I was leaving for Japan on a business trip, so I went down to the post office and tried to get a passport. And they
yeah.
I could get a passport, but it would take more than 12 weeks. And I said, well, how about expediting it? They said, well, yeah, you could do that, but that's going to take more than 5 weeks. And so I went up to the passport office in San Francisco, and they said, well, we would expedite it for you if it was going to be less than 2 weeks, but, but we won't do that. So I said, well, so I'm doomed, right? And so what they ended up have done, I wanted to tell you this, they've made a special arrangement with the with the clerk, the city clerk of San Francisco,
uh-huh.
they give you a note, and you have to go over to the city hall there in downtown San Francisco, and they have you stand in line again, and they charge you $120,
yeah.
And you fill out the form, and the passport's ready in a week.
This is some kind of extortion.
Okay.
Government extortion. I can't buy it, I can't believe it, and I want my money back.
Believe it.
All right, Steve, thank you very
All
much.
Right, bye.
We're heading to a break here. We'll take more calls coming up shortly, and Michael Ratner, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, will join us in the next segment to update us on court setbacks for the Bush administration on its torture policy, some progress in the Senate on reinstating habeas corpus, and we'll ask him, too, about a couple of cases that are being handled by the Center for Constitutional Rights currently. That's ahead here on the Tom Hartman Program. You can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Coast to Coast. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. I'm glad you're listening. We'll return to your phone calls in a moment at 866-303-2270. Michael Ratner is president of CCR, the Center for Constitutional Rights. They're based in New York, and they have been fighting the Bush administration's illegal detention policies and torture policies and others related to this so-called war on terror. And, Michael, I want to thank you for joining us today, and thank you for the hard work that you and your colleagues are doing at CCR.
Well, Peter, you've been following us for a long, long time, way before it was sort of popular to think about these issues. So it's really you as one of the key media people on this issue that I want to thank.
Well, tell us about the report that you and other human rights organizations released just yesterday about the ghost detention centers and some of the gulag locations that are now being identified by the work of a Swiss investigator named Dick Marty.
Well, you know, this is an extraordinary chapter in what has been just one of the most nasty chapters of American legal history. As many of your listeners know, of course, we've had Guantanamo, which is public, and we've had so-called secret CIA detention facilities where they pick up people all over the world and take them to these facilities, and then they torture them. And in September of 2006, President Bush said, well, we're not closing them, we're going to leave them open, but we're taking the last 14 people at these detention facilities, and we're taking them to Guantanamo. Now, we thought throughout this period that those were not all of the people that were there, and that we've been able to, with a number of other organizations working together, to issue a report, which I think is available on our website, or at least if people go there and can read about it, that there's still 39 other people that have been unidentified, names that we know either through their families or through research or other ways, and there may be countless others that still may be in secret CIA sites around the world. Again, we don't know where right now, but again, it's really people being disappeared. And what the report said, this is really the equivalent. This is disappearance. This is what the U.S. has condemned for years in Central and South America.
Well, and what this does is prove that the representations of Condoleezza Rice when she went through Europe in the fall of 2004, I called it the Ricepalooza tour because every stop she made, she denied that we conducted this kind of detention and that we tortured. And at every stop, virtually, somebody popped up like Khalid al-Masri in Germany, like the officials in Italy who talked about the way the CIA swiped a guy off the streets and took him to Egypt where he was indeed tortured. The evidence is spotty because our government has succeeded in keeping a lot of it secret or suppressed. But what we do know is very frightening and a major setback in America's constitutional approach to treating individuals.
You know, what we know, Peter, it's true, it's spotty, but it's conclusive at this point. I mean, it's conclusive in the sense that we have the flights down, the CIA flights, people, you know, plane watchers have been watching them. We have, as you said, al-Masri from Germany, who was actually taken to one of the U.S. sites. We have, of course, the center's client, Makar Arar, who was sent to Syria.
Mm-hmm.
We have the case of the Egyptian, who you mentioned, who was taken out of Egypt, and there's now 25 CIA agents have been indicted in Egypt. But it is a chapter of American history that I had hoped I never would have had to live through. This is what, you know, in the 80s, I was an activist, the center, other people were activists about what Pinochet was doing to disappear people into the gulags of Chile. And to think that our country, you know, I'm sure it always had certain clandestine services, but the fact that it's on this massive and massive scale and qualitative scale, and these sites are being run around the world is shocking. And you did in your introduction refer to Dick Marty's report. Dick Marty is a Swiss person working for the European Union who has issued a second report now that is much more damaging than his first report. And his second report, which was reported today, it concerns what Europe's role in these secret detention facilities and renditions are. And while I haven't read the report, I've read reports of it, and there's two really confirmed secret CIA prisons were located in both Poland and in Romania.
Right.
So you're talking about Europe sadly having a hand in these, maybe not Europe at every level of their governments, but certainly the intelligence agencies and probably up to the prime ministers.
Well, and despite denials and reassurances, it is very clear that the Bush administration either just mowed down opposition or had tacit approval from European leaders for the detentions in at least these two sites that we now know about in Romania and Poland, but also that they either, you know, turned a blind eye or tacitly approved the overflight of these rendition planes over European airspace.
I think they, I mean, my guess is that they tacitly approved these. They were approved at various levels of the government. Certainly the Italian, you know, the Italian intelligence minister has already been indicted for the approvals. It probably went up to Berlusconi in that case. Certainly the other countries. You don't fly these planes all over people's countries without them being very, very aware of what's going on and either turning a blind eye or approving them. And of course our government has been lying to the American people about it throughout this period until Bush finally admitted it in September, but that was still an admission laced with lies. And you have to ask yourself, you know, what's happened to our intelligence committees in Congress, even now controlled by the Democrats? Why aren't they going after this? Why aren't they subpoenaing the records? Why aren't they saying disappearances should have nothing to do with the America that we want to live in?
Michael Ratner with us, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Their website, where you can read the report that we've referred to, is ccr-ny.org. ccr-ny.org. Michael, earlier this week, a couple of court rulings set back the Bush administration. One is a long-running case involving a man named Hamdan. Talk about that for a moment.
Well, there's a couple of interesting things that have been going on in the court cases. There's these trials, Hamdan and Cotter, which it's too technical to explain, but they're at Guantanamo, and the question is whether they can be tried before military commissions, which are essentially courts, if you want to call them that. I call them kangaroo courts, that have been set up specially to try alleged terrorists who were held at Guantanamo. And, of course, they don't have any of the legal protections that we're used to in the United States, the use of hearsay testimony, classified material you can't see, torture testimony, the lawyers, you know, the judges appointed by the hand of the president. But there was a big setback. They've been trying to get a person to trial for 5.5 years. They haven't succeeded yet, with one small exception, which was a guilty plea by David Hicks, the Australian.
Hicks, right.
But they haven't succeeded yet, and they just got a blow again. What happened in the case was the people who were being tried, Hamdan, who was supposedly bin Laden's driver, Cotter, who was, as a 15-year-old, picked up for throwing a grenade at an American and allegedly killing an American, Cotter and Hamdan were about to be tried before these tribunals are about to be in the next few months. And the judges said, well, we don't have the jurisdiction to try them. These are military judges appointed by the president, essentially. And why didn't they? Well, these people, it said, have been classified as enemy combatants, quote, enemy combatants. But in fact, our jurisdiction to try people is only of unlawful enemy combatants. And we aren't competent to determine whether these people were unlawful or just enemy combatants.
Oh, my.
And they dismissed both cases. So, and the government, I just got a notice right now, is appealing them to a court that doesn't yet exist. There is an appeals court that the president has tried to set up. It hasn't been put into play because I don't think they expected an adverse ruling. But eventually, I guess within the next few weeks, that court will be operative. So we're just going to go on and on and on. I feel like Sisyphus in these cases. We've had our clients there 5.5 years in Guantanamo. We're still fighting to get their release. A lot have been deemed innocent even by the U.S. We're still trying to get that right of habeas corpus back. The Senate Judiciary Committee just finally reported out a bill. The House has been less bold, unfortunately. I'm not happy about it, but hopefully we'll get the right of habeas corpus, which is the right to go to a court and say, why are you holding me? Fundamental right. We'll hopefully get that restored.
Well, I would like to see that at a minimum, and I believe the entire Military Commissions Act of 2006 should be repealed, but I don't think we have that kind of courage in the Congress.
We don't, Peter. We don't. A big red X should go right through the whole act. It should be dumped. It's contrary to every single value a democracy should stand for.
And, Michael Ratner, tell us about the changes in the rules for attorneys working with clients at Guantanamo. One of the things I heard was that if I'm a detainee there, I get to meet with you, if you, you know, might be my attorney, once. And I have to make a decision after that meeting about whether I want you to represent me or not. That seems, you know, unconstitutional and simply unfair. Have some of these other rules been changed?
Peter, you know, it's happening right now, recently, as you speak about it. It's a result of the Military Commission Act, which restricted the writ of habeas corpus and our ability to go to federal court. And in light of that, the administration is saying, well, you don't need to see your clients that often because all you have is some, like, you know, what's the way to say it, surface-level appeal to a federal court. You can no longer present facts or anything else. So we're going to start cutting down on the number of visits. They first said to 3 visits. We won that, so we can continue to visit. But we're also going to say you can only go visit your client once, and if you don't come out of that room with an authorization, you can't go visit that client again, which may not sound strange to people, but it's outrageous in the context. It's taken some of our lawyers 10 months, 3 or 4 visits to get their clients to trust them. These are clients who, you understand, have been told by the United States and been tricked by the United States into people being sent in and saying, oh, we represent you, or we're your lawyers, and please talk to us, so they don't trust you when you go in there. Our clients have been told by the government that your lawyers are Jewish, that you can't trust them, your only way to get out of here is this and this. So it takes more than one meeting to get a client in the situation of 5.5 years of seeing nobody but the government to trust their lawyers. So it's just a continuation of the outrageous attacks on the legal system, particularly on lawyers, that have been going on in the Guantanamo cases.
Well, Michael Ratner, the Center for Constitutional Rights, thanks for what you've done, and don't stop.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you.
Again, visit ccr-ny.org, and if you're so inclined, send them some money. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Exposing the con in conservative, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Yes, it's the Tom Hartman Program, Anything Goes Friday, and you can call and talk about any subject. I'm amazed that it's been an hour and 50 minutes now, and nobody has talked about jailbird Paris Hilton. I take some relief in that, but if you want to talk about it, you may. Let's go to Blair in San Diego. Blair, you're on the Tom Hartman Program, and this is Peter B. Go right ahead.
Good morning.
Hi, Blair.
I am calling in regards to Dr. Butler.
Yes.
And first of all, I'd like to say God bless him. I have complete respect for anybody who gives service to our country. But I have to, with due respect, I have to disagree with him on the subject of giving kindness in order to extract information from detainees and any terrorists. I think that's absurd. I don't think that kindness is going to work in order to extract any information. I think that they would laugh in our face, and I think that if he's been given the option of kindness in order to divulge information, that he wouldn't have done it.
Well, Blair, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, what kind of information can these detainees give us? And when they're first captured, they might have intelligence that is worthwhile. But given that they are extremists and zealots and are willing to die for their cause, it's highly unlikely that they're going to spill that valuable information while it still has shelf life. And beyond that, torture is simply a kind of a vindictive approach to pummel people, but we really can't expect that they're going to tell us anything useful. And, Blair, the biggest issue here is one thing that Dr. Butler pointed out, and that is that he and his other American POWs took great strength in the knowledge that we at that time didn't torture, and that was one of the things that gave them inner strength. And the Bush administration, by essentially legalizing torture as practiced by the United States, has really brought us down a level to barbarism, and it's ineffective, it's impractical, and it's counterproductive. And I just think that it is sold to people, you know, like a primetime episode of 24, and that doesn't have a lot of connection to reality. So I'm sorry, I don't agree with you. I think that torture is not only wrong morally, that it is practically ineffective, and it is un-American in any case.
And their actions against us in 9/11 and various terrorist acts are an act of barbarism in itself. I mean, you've got of course, we don't know. We're not given the information. But there have got to be instances where torture has worked. I really truly believe that it has worked. And it may not always, of course. But Blair,
for you, with all due respect, to position your speculation against the 8 years of experience of Phil Butler, sorry.
But that's just one. That's just one case. That's one case.
Okay.
And you're speculating that torture is not working with our special forces, and we don't know that. And I truly believe that in some cases it does, and it's better than not. It's better than nothing. I mean,
No, it's not. I'm sorry, Blair. I simply don't agree with you. That we use long-term practices that have proven effective in winning over people, separating them from the cadres that they had loyalty to. And, you know, you can sometimes find ways to persuade people to give information. But persuasion is much more effective than torture. I'm sorry. Thank you for your call. Now to Ellen Ratner at Talk Radio News Service, and we will connect the dots. That was her brother, Michael, who was on with us in the preceding segment. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Well, we like to keep Air America Radio happy.
It's
a family thing.
Indeed. Where are you today, and what's the news?
I'm actually in New York for the New Media Seminar, Talkers New Media Seminar, so I know we're going to be seeing several of the Air America folks over here today. I think the biggest news, let's start with the most recent news first, is that it was announced today by the Pentagon, by Secretary Gates, that Peter Pace will not be recommended for another two-year term. He's considered, they said that it would be a two-year divisive, it would be a very divisive fight in the Senate, and they have nominated Mike Mullen, who is the Chief of Staff of Naval Operations, to take his place.
That's interesting. Another shuffle there at the Pentagon.
Another shuffle at the Pentagon. And speaking of Pentagon and shuffles, the White House is expanding its legal team. Fred Fielding's staff will go to 22 lawyers, and don't ask me what it is now because I don't remember. And since I'm not in Washington, I can't really look it up.
All right.
And J. Michael Farron of Xerox will actually be one of the lawyers there as well. The other interesting thing, of course, is the president is making his way to Poland, or actually is in Poland now from the GA, and Dana Perino gave a little bit of a readout on that and said that there was no specifics on China and the sanctions in the Sudan in the president's meeting. It doesn't sound like the president may have even brought that up.
Interesting. And what are you hearing about the way that Putin appears to have surprised Bush with a counterproposal? Putin is opposed to putting Star Wars in Poland and enhanced radars in the Czech Republic. And he said, hey, we got some really nifty missile sites in Azerbaijan. And it appears that that really threw Bush for a loop.
I am very not sure what this is about, and people I've talked to know something about Russia is not sure what this is about. Question one, is this Putin throwing an olive branch to his friend Mr. Bush? Two, is it a way of him accessing technology? Three, is it a genuine, reasonable proposal? Four, may it have to do with something about Russia's feelings about China and Iran? And I think that it's going to take a little while till that story unfolds, Peter B. Collins, and we can really find out what it means.
That will be very interesting. Ellen Ratner, thanks for checking in today.
Thank you.
That's Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman Program. We're heading into our third hour, and it's all callers on Anything Goes Friday. You want to speculate on whether Tony Soprano survives this final episode, or will it end Dallas style, where he gets shot? But we don't know what actually happens. That'll preserve movie and sequels, right? We can talk about that next hour. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome to this hour of the Tom Hartman Program. Tom is on an airplane on his way back to the United States after a week in Dubrovnik, Croatia. You heard him live via satellite from Dubrovnik yesterday, and he'll be back in the saddle here on Monday. I'm Peter B. Collins. I'm in San Francisco, and I'm delighted to be with you. It's an Anything Goes Friday. No more guests or any other intrusions are scheduled. It's just you and your phone calls for the next hour. Do you know the number? 866-303-2270. That's toll free. 866-303-2270. And I'm going to get right to some callers, but I wanted to throw out some topics that you might want to react to. Let's see. Nobody has called to tell me where they hide their loot. And so I want to move that up and ratchet that up this hour. William Jefferson was indicted on 16 counts, the Democratic congressman from Louisiana. And he's the guy who had $90,000 in marked FBI bills in his freezer. And Ralph, a cartoonist, sent me a cute little tune about that. Thank you, Ralph. But I want to know, if you had $90,000 in loot, you know, maybe you sold your yacht or somebody paid you in cash for something that you sold them, or, you know, maybe you're working in the black market. Where do you hide your money? I'd like to know about that at 866-303-2270. And just some quick summaries on topics out of Washington. Looks like immigration reform is dead, faster than you can say La Migra. And maybe they'll revive it. But I got a congratulatory email from Tom Tancredo. Said, yeah, we killed that amnesty. Well, maybe you feel that way, Mr. Tancredo. But there's some, by some accounts, 12 million people in this country whom we know nothing about, who can't get a driver's license, don't have insurance when they do drive, and they do drive. And they're living in the shadows. And frankly, I think that while this was not a perfect package, it did attempt to regularize the presence of individuals who are here without documentation. I guess we'll have another run at it with more vitriol, more hate, and more abuse of the term amnesty. That's something we can look forward to in the future. Stem cell coming out of the Congress. I'm pleased to see that, but it does appear that Bush will veto it to please the base. Doug Lute was up on the Hill yesterday for confirmation as the new war czar. And he had some confusion about the pecking order there. Technically, he is under Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor. But he told the senators that actually Hadley won't be too involved that much more in Iraq and Afghanistan issues. Then they took a break and he came back with a prepared statement, probably prepared by somebody else, where he said, well, Steve's very, very vital in all the whole process. And yeah. Bandar Bush, that's Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia, former ambassador to the United States. Turns out he's an accomplished arms broker. Picked up $2 billion in commissions on arms deals between Britain and Saudi Arabia. And that's just like his honorary father, Poppy Bush. One of the most sordid post-presidential careers. George H.W. Bush, active with this murky international arms trading group, the Carlyle Group. And also, speaker phones were in the news this week. The man named Speaker, who had TB and went to Greece to get married and started a whole flap over it, he testified by speakerphone to the Congress that, oh, gosh, I didn't know they didn't want me to fly. Oh, gosh, I'm really sorry. And Paris Hilton, the jailbird, at least last I heard this morning, was trying to appear at a hearing by speakerphone. She's under house arrest with a lovely little ankle bracelet. Maybe she'll get a tattoo around it and show it to us on TV. I don't know what happened with Paris, and do I care? Well, I'll let you guess about that. Well, I want to take care of a problem right now because Mary in San Francisco has been holding for way too long. Mary, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, and thank you for your perseverance.
Thank you. I have two things I wanted to talk about. The first one you can answer off the phone. One is about the impeachment. People always say they want to impeach Bush, and you know, I say, you know, let's wait till he's out of office, because if we impeach him while he's in office, then Cheney's just going to, you know.
Well, that's why Kucinich wrote the bill to impeach Cheney first.
Oh. So then it would be Pelosi that would have to.
No. What would happen if it occurred? Let's keep in mind that impeachment is the indictment by the House of Representatives of a sitting official. All right, then there's a trial in the Senate. And if the Senate voted to remove Dick Cheney, then he would be replaced by someone appointed by George W. Bush and confirmed by the Senate. So Pelosi would not become the vice president. It doesn't work that way.
So why don't we just wait till he's out of office and then charge him with war crimes?
There appears to be immunity for official acts. I'm not a legal scholar, so I don't want to pretend to know that, but my understanding is that there isn't much basis to pursue a president after the term. And the constitutional remedy is impeachment.
Okay, and the other thing that I really wanted to get to, and is the statement that you made earlier about Hillary, and I'm certainly not someone who's going to vote for her for president. But it bothered me when you a couple of things that you said. One was that about a dynasty.
Yeah.
You know, Bill was in office and all that, but she was obviously a very, very powerful and an intelligent woman during that time. And also saying that you'd hope people would give her a fair thing, which I think, you know, rightly so. But
yeah.
Say that her surname, you know, not to let that be a benefit to her, but, you know, that also could be a detriment, too. I mean, it's got a lot of others.
Mary, my point is this, that if we look back in 50 years and say from 1988 to 2012 or 2016, the only DNA that could provide qualified candidates for president came from the Bush families and the Clinton families, I think we would look back and shudder. And I simply want a freewheeling, open primary process, and that she should not be ordained or designated by the media or the pollsters as the shoe-in candidate for the Democrats.
But can't she stand on her merit? I mean, I just feel like, you know, if, you know, it's like, can't what she's doing stand on her merit rather than just because she happened to be married to Bill?
It's very hard to separate them, Mary.
I know it is, but as far as, you know, is a woman ever going to be president, people always say, I think she can't be electable, and it's all about her being a woman, you know, and I'm not going to vote for her, because I perfectly, you know, it's not my point to have
her. I'm not opposed to a woman being president. I don't support Hillary Clinton for a number of reasons. One is I don't think she has been honest with us about the war in Iraq, and she is now trying to position herself, and she's being pretty effective at it, as if she's been against the war all the time. And I also just question her judgment on a number of issues, and I am content with her as a great senator from New York, but I'd like to see some fresh blood. And we're seeing it. You know, I think that Barack Obama is a welcome addition to the Democratic process. I think Bill Richardson, while he's in the second tier, is a guy who has a lot to offer. I think that Dennis Kucinich brings a great deal to the debate. I'm glad Mike Gravel is out there. Some people think he's crazy, and I like him. I think that he is unafraid to blurt out what's on his mind. And we need a little more of that instead of all these rehearsed sound bites that have been tested before focus groups before they can be uttered in public.
Right. I mean, I agree with what with everything you're saying there. It's just that there was just sort of a tone to, you know, the fact that, you know, she was Bill Clinton's wife.
Well, I think I explained myself there. It's about the dynasty issue, and
right.
I just want to widen the pool. Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
Let's get a quick comment from Janet in Danville, New Jersey. Hello, Janet. Let's see. She's on line six. Go right ahead, Janet.
What?
Go ahead, ma'am. You're on the air.
I have a story about torture that comes from a book about Peter the Great by Robert Massey. And Peter had an opponent that he wanted some information from. So he had his soldiers torture the man. The session went on, and the man would not reveal the information. So much so that Peter was really impressed, and he said to the man, "I really admire your courage and your fortitude to the extent that I would invite you to be a part of my army." And the man broke down and cried.
Hmm.
He said, "You could torture me to the point of death, and I would not say one word, but I can't stand compassion."
Thank you, Janet.
And I just wish that some of our administration people would read that.
Okay, thank you for your call. And a listener emailed here in response to Blair, who called last hour. "Peter, your caller Blair is a perfect example of someone who's been traumatized by 9/11. This once sweet woman is now a torture advocate. Mission accomplished." That's from George in Seattle. More of your calls coming up. There's a line open at 866-303-2270. For Tom Hartman, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Turn this up, Chris. Now that's a hoot. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in, and I don't control most of the bumper music here. It comes on like an iPod on shuffle. I don't know what that tune is, but that's a keeper. We're taking your calls toll-free at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Tim in Glendale, AZ, took the bait about the Sopranos finale, and he said, "Tony Soprano will be arrested and tried for the murder of Chris. Following a routine autopsy, pathologists determined death caused by asphyxiation, not the auto crash. Moreover, since Tony was the only person with Chris at the time of the death, QED, guilty, life without parole. Phil will be shot by his nephew, the son of the one Phil killed. The balance of the cast will serve as jurors at Dick Cheney's trial for treason. All the ladies grab the jewels and cash and head for Florida." And then in the epilogue, the entire cast obtains machine pistols and shoots all writers, producers, and directors. Well, that would be the whack fest that I kind of expect. I think it's going to be a bloody final episode. And I do hold out the possibility that they're going to give us a cheesy Dallas ending. You know, who shot Bobby, or was it JR? I think Bobby died. That's too far back and too trivial. I cannot recall. Who shot JR? Yeah, but Bobby died in one of the season enders, too, and then came back to life the following fall. So I don't know if there'll be a Dallas ending to it or not, but we will have to wait and see. Oh, gosh, some of you people have been holding almost forever. How about Ray in Fords, New Jersey on line three? Hello, Ray. You're on the Tom Hartman Program, and this is Peter B.
How you doing, Peter?
Good.
Hey, I heard in a couple hours ago you were talking about the conspiracy about the World Trade Center being detonated.
Uh-huh.
I would have never believed it could be possible unless well before that event had taken place, I saw a TV program where an engineer had showed how he has to carefully choose the charges he needs to detonate a five-story building so it goes straight down on itself and doesn't flop over and damage adjoining properties.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing that, I find it's very difficult to believe that you can do a 100-story building without that intricate planning that he showed. He went through probably a half an hour showing how he did it.
Right. Well, I understand the questions that linger. And, Ray, in order to challenge the official story, which I call a myth, about 9/11, we do not have to be able to prove every element of how things actually occurred. And without trying to, you know, change the subject or deflect, I will say that I don't know what happened to the Twin Towers, but I am highly suspicious of the way they came down. I'm even more suspicious of Building 7 at the World Trade Center. It wasn't hit by a plane. There was a fire in one of the diesel tanks at the emergency center in that building, but it doesn't nearly explain why that came down at 5:23 in the afternoon. And now, a videotape has surfaced from the BBC's live coverage of the events of 9/11 in New York. And there's a really bizarre scene there that you've got to see, Ray. There's a BBC reporter doing what they call a stand-up, and she's standing up, and behind her, Building 7 is clearly visible in the frame of the picture. Yet she is reporting at that time, which is at about 5:10 New York time, about 12 minutes before Building 7 actually came down. She's reporting that Building 7 had already collapsed. Now, I can't explain it. I can only say that it doesn't add up, and I want a full investigation. Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that. Now to Marianne in New York on the same subject. Go ahead, Marianne.
Hi, Peter B. My comment was on one of your earlier callers who was, I believe, totally in denial about 9/11. You know, and he was stating that an administration that was that inept, that bungled Katrina, could not have masterminded 9/11. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are just walking around with blinders or blindfolds on, you know, the Katrina has nothing to do with being inept. I think it displays how inept the government is and how stupid we are to allow people to just push people out of their homes and take over and develop an area. In the midst of this crisis.
Katrina was callous disregard. Was the same true of 9/11? We know about the August 6th presidential brief. We know about the 54 other warnings forwarded by Russia, by Israel, by other governments to the United States. Why were they ignored? We still don't know the truth. The 9/11 Commission didn't bring it to us. I want to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program. More calls coming up. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes after the hour. I'm sitting in today for Tom once again, Peter B. Collins from San Francisco. And I'm the host of a West Coast-based syndicated radio show on great stations that also carry the Tom Hartman Program, like KGOE in Eureka, KBBR in Coos Bay, Oregon, and the mighty KRXA 540 in Monterey. Plus people in Portland, Oregon hear my show on the weekends on KPOJ 620. And I'd love you to stay in touch with me. My website is peterbcollins.com, and that's where you can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Tony did it. He's a San Franciscan who is in Puerto Rico today and listening online. That's great, Tony. It's amazing how all this works. And he asks, am I broadcasting in the San Francisco area? Not at this time, but feel free to weigh in with the folks at 960 The Quake. Their website is quakeradio.com, and let them know what you think. All right, time to take more calls here. And Len in New York City has been holding forever. Len, welcome to the program today. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
No thanks for taking my call. How's that?
I appreciate that.
Okay.
That's a crutch and a waste of time.
A couple of things that came up. One, the first is with the whole 9/11 discussion. Is have people mentioned, because I came in the middle, the website Loose Change 9/11?
We have talked about it. Sure. It's a powerful film. I think that it raises a lot of great questions. It offers some alternate scenarios. I don't treat it as gospel, but I think it's a powerful piece that should raise a lot of questions with a lot of people. The other source that I think is really valuable is David Ray Griffin. He's a retired theologian who is now into his fourth book on 9/11 called Debunking 9/11 Debunking. And once you get started there, it's really hard to put it down.
Well, the last thing I have to say about it is, you know, I heard from different people different things that they, you know, what they couldn't, you know, handle. Like there was a problem with the whole, but when they put it all together, then you really obviously know there's a lot of questions to be answered. But my call originally...
Len, hold on a sec. We'll get to your point. This whole discussion provoked just during the break. I was eavesdropping on Lauren and Chris and others in the booth at Control Room in New York. And I realize that people get uncomfortable when you raise these questions. And I also realize that I don't have all the answers, so I can't give you a pat explanation of exactly why Building 7 came down or what actually did happen at the Pentagon. My bottom line point is we don't know the truth, and we deserve and need to know it.
Exactly. And we'll get to it probably in the next administration if it's a Democratic one. But the,
Don't be so sure.
I figured I'd complain to you because I couldn't get Harry Reid on the line or Chuck Schumer, who's my senator, and Hillary's too busy. You know, I'm just so disappointed with the Harry Reid as the Democratic senator, you know, senatorial leader.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not just what he hasn't been doing, it's his tone. He sounds so ineffective, ineffectual, and half-hearted so much of the time that I can't imagine these guys aren't getting together and saying, you know, maybe it's time we have new leadership here. You know, I mean, whether it's Russ Feingold, I mean, even a new guy like Jim Webb could just project better the meaningfulness of, you know, the Democratic,
well,
you know,
Len,
agenda.
Obviously you do not belong to any exclusive clubs because you don't know how the game is played. And unfortunately, Mike Webb, you know, is about number, 44 in line for the leadership of the Democrats in their majority role there in the Senate. I actually favor Dick Durbin, who is the number two senator from Illinois. I believe that he is a better speaker, a more dynamic leader, and he's more progressive than Harry Reid on a number of issues. But we don't get to make that choice. I will say that I think Reid and Pelosi have done the best they could with a very weak hand. Hear me out, and I'll let you respond. Again, I wish Harry were stronger, and I'm not dismissing your criticisms, but given that Joe Lieberman, particularly with Tim Johnson out and now and before the senator from Wyoming died, at any moment, Joe Lieberman could have bolted from caucusing with the Democrats and thrown Harry Reid out as leader. And he maneuvered through that minefield, I think, fairly well. And he and Pelosi, knowing that the Democrats were not unified behind them, still went to the White House and bluffed as best they could. That's my take.
Well, I got it. 100% I got it. Here's my take, okay? There's a football game to some degree, but hold on one second.
Sorry, you can't put us on hold.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. There's a football game to some degree, but more than one at a time. And, you know, the issue with the war is one issue, but this issue with the immigration. I mean, the reason so many people were against the bill was it didn't address their concerns in a reasonable order. And they could have worked. I mean, my personal feeling, I might be the only hardcore Democrat that thinks we need a fence on the border, at least as a first step, because without that, then you can't get on to the other conversation.
All right, Len, I need to move on. I will simply say that we have every right to secure our borders, and I think a fence is a stupid idea. Let's go to Ann in Orange County, behind the orange curtain. Welcome, Ann. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, happy Friday.
Same to you. Anything goes. What's on your mind?
I got three answers for you rapid fire here. Number one, I'm going to hide the money in my compost pile.
All right. Doesn't Tony Soprano have $100,000 in the backyard?
Yeah, but you got to put it under the worms. They don't want to go in the worms. Number two, Hillary is a corporatist, just like Bill. He had a good run and did some good things, but he gave us NAFTA and he gave us media monopolies, and those are the two things that are killing the middle class. Number three, torture. God, I feel so bad when youngsters, she's such an ignorant little sweetie. Torture we can't have because it doesn't work. Everyone will confess to something, and then people are running around following leads that have nothing to do with the truth. Number two, if they ever do find something that's true, it's not admissible in court, so we can't do any proceedings against these people. And number three, people want to talk to us when we have the moral high ground because their number one request is, let me come to the United States and I'll tell you what I know.
Now, I lost track of your numbers there, Ann, but I agree with almost everything you said. Thanks for your call today, and I'll be visiting your backyard as soon as you get that money buried there, okay? Gary, Bellingham, Washington, you're next. This is Peter B. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Peter B. I don't know how many folks know that this enhanced interrogation, a.k.a. torture, of all these disappearing folks has been officially endorsed by the American Psychological Association.
Gosh, I missed that.
Yeah, the psychologist did it, and then the psychiatrist, the American Psychiatric, same acronym, refused to go along with DOD. So now what, and on Common Dreams today, there's a wonderful letter where they're showing a split of some highly ethical psychologists that don't want to participate in what they call the SEER program, S-E-R-E. They're not going to use psychological tactics to torture, because that's what the PSYOPs is all about, how to humiliate Muslims and how to be in on disgracing these people. And it's a real misuse of psychology. It's pathetic and unethical.
Well, I fully agree. Thank you for the call. Now to Lois in the People's Republic of Berkeley, California. Lois, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Listening to 960 The Quake.
Yeah, I'm listening to The Quake. I wanted to say that about torture, that poor young woman, she may be a bit indoctrinated. Like when I have big sewing projects and I have to watch television, almost every time there'll be a torture scene, like somebody will be choking someone in a hospital bed or something, and of course the bad guy always gets caught and it works out in the end.
Yeah.
And the other thing is there's that arms deal in Britain that Tony Blair has something to do with and he's trying to suppress.
Right.
And
yeah,
if you know anything more about it, I'd like to hear.
Tony is trying to suppress an investigation because he doesn't want to damage Britain's relationship with the royal family of Saudi Arabia. In turn, the Saudis are very tight with the Bush family here in America. And so what has been revealed is that Bandar, who was the U.S. ambassador, the Saudi ambassador to the U.S., and cozy with Bush Sr., had a pretty good relationship with W. He pocketed about $2 billion on a series of arms transactions, I believe, between Britain and the Saudi kingdom, perhaps other clients as well. And so that is what has been revealed to date. Of course, the British press is where we go to find out what's really going on, because you can't get a lot of that in the American media. So there's more to come out, but that's what I can tell you up to this minute. Thank you, Lois.
You're welcome.
And let's see, somebody's been here a long time. Carl in Brownsville, Oregon. My apology. You're next here on the Tom Hartman program. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, wow. It only took me 2 hours to get on.
Sorry.
Thank you for accepting my call.
Okay.
I gathered that the theme of your show was the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and how it's been abused by this administration, which I cannot agree more. I think the Bush administration has a total lack of respect for the oath of office that they took. But my main point is every member of Congress, every president, every vice president takes the same oath, and that is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution against enemies, both foreign and domestic.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Democrats want the secret to keeping power forever, all three branches, all they have to do is drop their opposition to the Second Amendment. There's 100 million gun owners. It is really the only issue that truly hurts them. And if they drop their opposition to the Second Amendment, they will be in power forever.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I understand your logic there. I don't embrace it because I think that the Second Amendment is widely misinterpreted. And what you're saying, I believe, is that we should simply cozy up to the NRA. And that's a kind of a bedfellow that I don't want to be in the sack with. I'm Peter B. Collins. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Stick around for the Randy Rhoads Show, coming up next on Air America Radio.
Wow, it's the Guess Who? It's the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B. Collins. Just before the break, we were talking about the Second Amendment with a caller. And during the break, an email came in from my old pal Steve Pizzo. He wrote the book about the savings and loan scams of the 1980s. And the subject line of the email reads, Second Amendment for Morons. And the story is about a Colorado sheriff who says the Colorado State University should allow students and faculty to carry concealed firearms on campus. Responding police to an active shooting situation get to guess who the good guys are or just shoot everyone holding a gun. That's the editorial comment from Senor Pizzo. And this just came in, too, and this is just too rich. Do you remember a few years back, this is 20, 30 years, we learned that Marilyn Chambers, a porn star, Behind the Green Door? I don't recall. Had been hired years before that as the model on the box of Ivory Snow detergent. Well, have you heard about the new Creationism Museum in Kentucky? According to the Associated Press, the man who plays Adam, you know, of Adam and Eve, in a video that is at the Creationist Museum, I think it's near Louisville or Lexington, Kentucky, has led a different life, outside the Garden of Eden. The actor Eric Linden owns a graphic website called Bedroom Acrobat, where he has been pictured smiling alongside a drag queen, not Rudy Giuliani to our knowledge, in a T-shirt brandishing the site's sexually suggestive logo. The website has a network of members, allows users to post explicit stories and photos. He also sells clothing for SFX International, whose initials appear on clothing to spell sex from a distance. And Linden is a graphic designer, a model, and actor who grew up in Columbus, Ohio, said he is no longer affiliated with the Bedroom Acrobat site. He's given the domain name to somebody else. Maybe Jeff Gannon? it's just too rich. And by the way, I didn't make that up because I didn't have to.
I used to expose myself to people out on the streets. Now when I feel the urge to sin, I just fall down on my knees. And I say,
holy God, have all one time for me.
That's Country Joe McDonald from way back there, and that comes from the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Music Archives. Marvin in Astoria, Oregon knows how to handle an Anything Goes Friday. Marvin, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter B.
Hi.
Guaranteed in the laundry room, under the dirty clothes after everybody's changed their underwear for a couple of days, nobody's going there.
That's where you'll hide your loot when you get the payoff from William Jefferson?
Yeah, it'd probably be a good idea to bolt it down to the ground, but I'm sure that nobody'd dive in there.
All right, Marvin, nice to know where things are safe at your house.
I'm just curious, too, whatever became of Mark Foley anyway? He kind of fell off the map. Are they going to prosecute that guy?
I haven't heard. He resigned from Congress. He went into rehab, and you know, I'm sure he'll pop up as an IT consultant to some text messaging outfit sometime soon. Thank you, Marvin. Appreciate your call today. Let's see. Nick in Columbia, South Carolina has a comment. Nick, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I'm a regular listener to the Hartman program.
Hope you'll continue, even though I've been here this week.
Yeah. You made a comment earlier about Hillary Clinton that I don't agree with, and I'd like to stress my opinion of it.
Go ahead.
Okay, you said that she was like a flip-flopper because she voted for the war and then changed her mind later. Well, if that's the case, half Americans did the same thing, because I'm a retired military Korean vet.
Mm-hmm.
And with the hogwash that was sent to me, I felt the same way.
All
but right now, after finding out the facts, I had to change my mind. I don't think I'm a flip-flopper, and I don't think that was improper.
Okay, number one, I didn't use the term flip-flop. What I said was that I don't trust her judgment and that she has tried to pivot and present herself as fully against the war. She did vote against the recent supplemental, and I give her credit for that. But in the debate, she tries to say that, you know, there's so much more difference between us and Bush than there is between, say, me and Barack Obama. Well, that's spin. That's not really true. And she may be able to persuade some Americans who haven't been paying attention that that's true, but she won't persuade me. Thank you, Nick. Now to Dorothy in Raymond, Washington. You're on the Tom Hartman program, Dorothy.
Hi. I just wanted to give my take on why Nancy Pelosi said there would be no impeachment.
Okay.
I watch C-SPAN all the time, and I've seen the AIPAC big the annual convention, and Howard Reed and Nancy were up there, and I just have a feeling that they're pretty well supported. I think the Democrats are supported just like the Republicans.
Well, I share your concern. I think that AIPAC has too much influence in Washington. I don't know explicitly how much impact they had on Nancy Pelosi, but after the AIPAC conference, the Democrats stripped out language in the supplemental that was vetoed ultimately anyway, but it was language that would have required an explicit authorization for a military assault on Iran. That's something I think is very important. Israel doesn't support it, and people note correctly that after the AIPAC conference, that was removed, and I'm not comfortable with that. Well, thanks for all your calls. We didn't get to everybody, but I appreciate you checking in. You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. And Tom Hartman returns Monday here to conduct his program, the Tom Hartman Program, on Air America Radio. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.